From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
The North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is widely considered to be the world's gold standard for fisheries management. As such, they are expected to manage stocks sustainably in the context of the whole ecosystem, while at the same time accounting for the effects of a quickly changing climate. It's a tall order, and fisheries managers are often faced with some very hard questions. So, at the end of every meeting, they present a list of these questions to their scientists for answers. For instance, the council is currently mulling a proposal to allow for captured small sablefish to be carefully released back into the sea, so more of them can grow to a size at which they will contribute to the spawning biomass and be of greater commercial value. As they mull, one of the questions they have to ask themselves is, what is the likely effect of the act of capturing and releasing sablefish on their ability to survive after being released? Like many things that happen out in the wide ocean, this is a head-scratcher. Estimates of mortality so far have been based on tagging programs, but great care is taken when tagging fish to help them survive, including keeping them continuously wet and letting them recover in an onboard holding tank. They needed to try to measure the effects of careful capture and release as it might actually occur on a catcher vessel. So, scientists from the Alaska Fisheries Science Center, teaming up with a veterinary professor from Oregon State University, chartered the fishing vessel Sea View to go out and catch some small sablefish with hook and line gear. Immediately after capture, they tested the reflexes of 32 fish. They found that after capture, 23% couldn't right themselves when turned upside down, 31% did not react to a tail grab, and 43% had no reaction to sound when they wrapped on the container. So one could assume that a similar amount of fish released at the rail might have the same physical impairments. But how well would those fish recover after release? Also, pot fishermen have to bring the fish all the way up on deck before returning them back into the water. Would that make a difference? To answer those questions, they brought all 32 fish home with them. Home in this case being the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Auk Bay Laboratories in Juneau. There, they were carefully placed into specially built tanks. These tanks were kept as midnight dark as their Ocean Canyon homes, except for the red spectrum lights, which the fish can't see. Seawater was pumped in from a deep water channel and chilled to the temperature of the ocean depths. For a month and a half, the scientists fed their guests tidbits of salmon and squid under the red lights, and they waited to see if any died. None of them did. After 45 days at the Auk Bay Fish Spa, all 32 of the guests were feeling pretty frisky. So they proceeded to the next step. First, they broke them into four groups and performed the same reflex tests again. The first group was tested as they were on the boat, with no time out of the water. The others were tested after being held 3, 6, and 11 minutes out of the water to approximate the time it might take for a pot boat to dump a pot and sort the fish. What they found out was that every single reflex tested had completely recovered, even in fish held out of the water for 11 minutes, except for one. Out of the control group, the ones with zero time out of the water, 37% still had no reaction to sound. And of the fish held out of the water, only four showed a sound reflex afterward. Of the group held for 11 minutes, there were zero positive sound reflexes. So, both the stress of capture and being held out of the water seemed to make sablefish go deaf. That begs the question, does it matter? This is a serious question. It's not immediately clear that sablefish can hear in the first place. Their otoliths and lateral line can sense movement, but they lack the air bladder that is often associated with hearing in other fishes. It's possible they hear in a completely different way. The fact is, we just don't know. But one clue might be that they can and do talk. Only a small percentage of fish have been shown to make sounds on purpose, and it's even more rare in deep water fishes. But suspicions that raucous noises recorded in Barkley Canyon were in fact a cacophony of sablefish were confirmed when the same sounds were recorded in holding tanks and net pens full of nothing but sablefish. Interestingly, the sounds they make are remarkably whale-like. They even called them rasps, named after whale rasps. Killer whales that eat fish are notoriously noisy when they hunt. Can sablefish hear them? If so, does it help them avoid being eaten to be able to hear them? Sperm whales have been shown to use echolocation as they snatch sablefish from the hooks of longliners. It's worth noting that sablefish rasps are in the same acoustic range as sperm whale sounds. If sablefish can hear, they can probably hear sperm whales. More questions for the scientists. The study I'm referring to was penned by Christiane V. Lohr, John A. Diamond, and Kara Rajveller, who was very generous with her time. Thanks, Kara. I'll post a link to their work on the KMXT website with this episode.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
All right, let's start it.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Kodiak recently bid so long to the vessel Wild Alaskan. The boat was once the envy of the Alaska fishing fleet, but she lived out her last years as a somewhat notorious floating strip club. After the owner was found guilty of dumping raw sewage into the harbor, she languished on anchor until she was finally declared a nuisance vessel. In early July, she was towed out to sea, 75 miles southeast of Kodiak, and sent to her watery grave. But as KMXT's Dylan Simard reports, there's much more to her story.
Long before strippers gyrated for fishermen who boarded the Wild Alaskan for a night of fun, she was known as the FV Shaman, one of the most profitable boats to ever throw pots in Alaskan waters. She had $1 million price tag when she was built in Tacoma in 1974, 110 feet long with a high wheelhouse, made to shrimp and crab, and boy did the Shaman crab. Tom Hendel and his brother worked on the crew back in the late 70s when the Shaman was in its glory days.
We were the top boat on Kodiak and bringing in deck loads every day, but I knew, had one friend who came up from California, got a job at a cannery, was working on the dock unloading. Some guy got hurt on a big crab boat. They hired him off the dock, and he made $100,000 in 6 weeks. That was a pretty common story. A good season in 6 weeks or so would have been $40,000 to $60,000. $100,000 seasons in the early 70s were very common. But you got to remember, in back nearly to mid-70s, we started fishing the middle of August, and we'd fish all the way to December.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, reliably delivering for Kodiak since 1964.
The skipper of the Shaman, Chuck Wells, had a shrewd reputation, a World War II veteran and a taskmaster who ran his crew hard. Even so, Hendel says he was well-loved and admired for his exploits, like the time he pried the Shaman off a sandbar in False Pass.
False Pass is usually marked with buoys after they figure out the passage because it changes every winter. And we laid that Shaman over sideways when the tide got a hold of us on a sandbar, and starboard rail was underwater, and one crew member put a life ring around his waist and climbed over the rail on the high side.
walk-in cooler door came open and frozen roasts were flying around, and ducks up there laughing. And I realized that, well, we were in 12 feet of water and the boat was 36 feet wide, so I didn't really need to worry. And he just turns the rudder hard over to port and pours the coals to the engine and rights the boat up, and then we just keep sealing our way out.
Back then, as Kodiak fishermen are fond of saying, crab was king. And it was. Some made millions in the Bering Sea. But other mariners were not so lucky.
I gotta tell you this too, guys were dying every day, it seems like, back in the 70s and 80s. We'd be on the radio listening to Maydays and the Coast Guard trying to find people, and boats going down and friends of ours.
Hendel says he's still haunted by one tragedy.
And we were listening to the Coast Guard answer a Mayday, and it was the exact same boat of the Shaman, but it was a low wheelhouse, and they were heading from offshore, coming from Seattle, and they were icing up. They called a Mayday, and we're listening to this whole thing going on for hours, and Chuck said, well, they're dead, because they told the Coast Guard they were heading to shore, and Chuck said, the closer you get to shore, the colder the air gets and the more ice you make. And they were on the radio telling their loved ones they loved them and goodbye, and they're all dead.
The Shaman had its share of close calls, but it went on to fish lobster in Hawaii for several years in the mid-80s, after the crab fishery got more competitive. Later, the boat was part of a federal buyback program in the 90s and fell out of Chuck Wells' hands. At some point in the late 2010s, the Shaman fell into the hands of Darren Byler, who turned it into the Wild Alaskan Strip Club. After the Wild Alaskan was impounded by the city of Kodiak in 2017, she lay derelict in the Near Island Harbor. Kodiak's notoriously temperamental weather scoured her hull and stripped away paint that already struggled to conceal the boat's age. When the ship was in its prime, Carmen Lundy used to do books for the Shaman. Although she was devastated to see how much the ship had deteriorated, she says at least the Shaman's saga is finally over, and now the boat and its old skipper are reunited at last.
Broke my heart. I don't know that Chuck would have been against the strip club. He would have probably thought, I mean, I had a hunch he would think that, well, all right. To see it be sunk, the only thing that makes me even feel even a little better is that now that they've deep-sixed it, it's the same place as ashes are.
And so ends the true but tragic tale of the Shaman, remembered in Kodiak as both famous and infamous, but always with fondness. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
All right.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, which recognizes the importance of Alaska's sustainable fisheries to the state's economy.